Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News.
And greetings to you, fellow Portlanders. From high above the milkpacking district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge to be had from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson, alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, bearing a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
The federal government is allowing BP to keep the cap on their busted oil well. President Obama criticized Republicans while calling for an extension of jobless benefits. And one man is killed and three are injured in a cannon accident on the Oregon coast.
That's right. A little something in the air there. Yes. As always, my friends, I have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when this hour began. And now, without further ado, I give you Legion of News.
The federal government allowed BP to keep the cap shut tight on its ruptured Gulf of Mexico oil well for another day, despite something seeping near the sea floor. The Obama administration's point man for the spill, retired Coast Guard Admiral Thad Allen, said early today that the company promised to watch closely for signs of new leaks around the mile-deep well, which has stopped gushing oil into the water since the experimental cap was closed on Thursday. Late Sunday, Allen said something was detected seeping near the broken oil well and demanded in a sharply worded letter that BP step up monitoring the ocean floor. Allen didn't say what was seeping. White House Energy Advisor Carol Browner told the CBS Early Show seepage was found less than 2 miles from the well site.
When they say something is seeping, is it like one of those things where they say something lives at the bottom of Loch Ness? They don't mean like it was a leviathan or something. They just mean oil, right?
They probably, yeah, I think.
It's not like it's seeping. It's not like it's seeping nougat.
That's the thing, though. They don't know.
Until
they test it, how do they know? It could be delicious nougat.
I suppose until somebody really gets down there and just mucks around and sees exactly what's going on, there's really no way to be sure. All right, well, clearly a Cousteau needs to be brought in, like, right now. Or a Wonka, possibly.
Well, their concern was that since pressure readings on the cap weren't as high as expected, that there might be a leak elsewhere in the wellbore, which means the cap may have reopened to prevent the environmental disaster from becoming even worse and harder to fix.
So wait, it might not be the worst disaster in the history of the world. It might be even worse than that.
Right.
Okay. It might in fact be worse than the worst thing that's ever happened.
Well, putting it this way, they put the cap on, as we had discussed previously, putting the cap on increases pressure, which means that there could be something that could leak elsewhere in the pipeline.
Right.
If there's an underground leak, it could let oil and gas escape through the bedrock and the mud. And so it wouldn't just be like a pipe with a hole that needs to be fixed. It would be stuff like in the ground underneath, just willy-nilly seeping around and destroying even further things.
We're all going to be dead this time next year, aren't we, Don?
Quite likely.
Okay, there you go. So it is in fact a fate worse than death, apparently, on the way for us. Huzzah! All right, here's Don Taylor at the Legion of News news desk.
President Barack Obama urged Congress today to pass an extension of unemployment benefits, saying that Senate Republicans have allowed short-term political concerns to trump the needs of the jobless. During an appearance in the Rose Garden, Obama argued that the federal government has a responsibility to offer emergency assistance to people who desperately need it and an obligation to help families make ends meet.
That's socialism, Don.
And we have some audio over there.
Yes, we do.
Benefits.
All right, let's see. This is, all right, here we go.
Time there's been a tradition under both Democratic and Republican presidents to offer relief to the unemployed. That was certainly the case under my predecessor when Republican Senators voted several times to extend emergency unemployment benefits. But right now, these benefits, benefits that are often the person's sole source of income while they are looking for work, are in jeopardy. And I have to say, after years of championing policies that turned a record surplus into a massive deficit, the same people who didn't have any problems spending hundreds of billions of dollars on tax breaks for the wealthiest Americans are now saying we shouldn't offer relief to middle-class Americans like Jim or Leslie or Denise, who really
He's
need
just
help.
Neighbors.
I have no idea who those people are.
Apparently it's good to be one of those folks, because if the president says your name on television, the odds are your benefits will be extended. That's the guy at the unemployment office isn't going to F with you if Obama was on television saying, Denise needs benefits and she needs them now.
Good. Excuse me, I'm Leslie. Okay, here's your check.
Oh, sorry, Mrs. The President said your name at the press conference.
The Senate is set to consider a bill Tuesday that would extend the deadline to file for unemployment benefits through the end of November. That bill would cost $33 billion in additional deficit spending, according to the Congressional Budget Office. Obama says that the Republicans, who have voted three times in the last weeks to using parliamentary maneuvers to block the vote, that they are guided by a misguided notion that a new relief bill would discourage people from looking for work. He says that attitude reflects a lack of faith in the American people. And we have more here.
Because the Americans I hear from in letters and meet in town hall meetings, Americans like Leslie,
Americans,
Jim, and Denise.
You know, Leslie,
they're not looking for
and Denise.
A handout.
Who is Denise?
They desperately want to work. Just right now, they can't find a job. These are honest, decent, hardworking folks who've fallen on hard times through no fault of their own and who have nowhere else to turn except unemployment benefits and who need emergency relief to help them weather this economic storm.
I'm all in favor of you know, unemployment, and I think that they should extend the benefits and all of that. But I have to say, though, I've only been on unemployment once, and I didn't look that hard for work. I got to say, it was like the only time I've ever been on unemployment, and I was like, woohoo, free money. And I just took the money and then just went, I'll get a job when the benefits run out.
I don't know. I'll do it, but SportsCenter just loops all night long. It's so difficult. And I don't like the look of that Denise either. She's a little shifty-eyed to me, frankly. And although, does he say, is there something here? Let me make sure that I heard this correctly.
Because the Americans I hear from in letters and meet in town hall meetings, Americans like Leslie.
When he talks about, and it isn't Americans, it's Americans. There's an apostrophe in part of that. That's like when he talks about meeting, quote, decent folks. And I'm surprised that he actually bothered to pluralize it. He didn't say decent folk, because that's normally the way they go with that. I have never heard anyone, other than myself, actually, in real life, use the phrase folks, decent folks, or Americans, unless they were standing behind a platform or a podium that had the presidential seal on it, or they were hoping to stand behind that platform or podium. That is one of those things out of the presidential refrigerator magnet set that they give you. It was like the presidential phrase book, like from Berlitz.
It makes you sound down home and like one of the regular people.
Well, it's
if
like
you say folks.
Or if you do this, if you single out a person that your advance team found in like Schenectady, where they go, it's about the man who runs a small dry cleaning operation in Akron, you know, and there is no man.
Like Jim Stevens over here, who runs the Tasty Clean.
And his wife, Leslie.
All right. The thing about unemployment benefits is, well, first of all, it's different in Oregon than it is everywhere else, because in the rest of the country, it is true that that is something that you pay, you know, that your tax dollars pay into, that you fork over money, and so you ought to get that back. In Oregon, it's a little bit different, because I guess you can make the argument that it came from you because it comes from businesses which are in turn funded, I guess, by consumers. But in Oregon, they actually do have this pretty great algorithm worked out. There's this guy who is one of the advisors to Kitzhaber, who actually sat across from me in Outlook Portland and explained the whole thing to me, and I just did that thing of kind of narrowing my eyes and furrowing my brow and going, No, it's fascinating, really, and trying to act like I understood it, and I really didn't. But it's this amazingly complex formula to where businesses pay in relative to how many people they've hired and how many people they've let go. But I'm with you. When you get unemployment, immediately it's like there's something in those checks. There's some additive or something. There's some sort of chemical in the ink that just causes your muscles to atrophy. And it just becomes so incredibly hard to get off the sofa.
Well, no, in some states, the unemployment is really minimal. And so, yeah, it's barely enough to help. So, yes, you desperately do want a job because the unemployment really isn't enough to carry you. This one and only time I was ever on unemployment, it was a good 3/4 of what my salary had been before I got laid off.
Yeah.
And then I was in that big period where they extended the benefits. So I got unemployment for like 18 months.
No, I think unemployment.
And there was no incentive for me to go out and look for another crappy job that I hated.
Yeah, it's not a safety net, Dawn. That's a hammock. That's what that is. Welfare queen. Don't get me wrong. I'm not passing judgment, you understand? Somebody offers you free money, you take that. I mean, this is America. If somebody offers you something for nothing, it is yours, and it is yours to do with as you please.
Well, and there is a thing, and just this is not really, I don't think this is really editorializing, but I was pointed out in a novel I read once, someone was being very proud and didn't want to take any kind of like welfare benefits or anything like that, and someone pointed out that, you know, we all, when we work, we all pay into the pool that in some fashion that provides these benefits. So if you actually need them, you shouldn't feel shame drawing from that pool. But we do, though, to a certain extent.
Well,
you know?
but that's...
Like, I took my unemployment checks, but there was no way I was going to get food stamps, for example. You know, I just would not even consider.
Well,
because
we have that weird Puritan work ethic that's been drilled into us, but you don't want to be, as Stephen King would say, on the county, you know, or on the dole or whatever. Which, you know, and I can understand that because there is, but it is such a subtle distinction. I mean, and let's be honest, the only reason you want to be, and I don't mean you, but I mean the collective you, the only reason you want to be on welfare is because you've seen the other people in welfare, and they're always in front of your plaid pantry trying to buy cigarettes in their Oregon Trail card, and you know it's true, just there buying a bottle of Ripple and some scratchers. So, nobody wants to be like that. I got to tell you, when I was growing up, though, it's not like I was destitute, but my parents didn't have a lot of money, and they went through a period where they were both unemployed, and I don't know, I don't remember how it worked, because I was too young to really be aware of it, but I know we got that government cheese. Let me tell you, no lie, and you know if you've had it, that's some of the best eating you will ever do, food given to you by the government, because you go to the store, there's like USRDA, you know, grade A or B or, you know, whatever, yeah. I don't know if it's still this way, but when I was growing up in Washington State, if you got food given to you by the government, like if you like poor folks' food, that now I'm doing the Obama thing. It's for folks that can't eat, like Rick Emerson. The food from the government is fantastic.
Really?
It was amazing because it's all the staples. It's like meat, dairy, bread, whatever, and it was like top of the line because it literally is. It's you feel like Fantastic Mr. Fox because it's like it is literally from the government's own storehouses.
Oh.
It's like
always said that government cheese would not be very good
it
cheese.
No, oh, you would be wrong about it. I mean, it's none of your fancy Ivy League going out to row crew in the morning cheese.
So you're not getting like cans of the prison tuna.
No. That's in the military where you get that. Ah. Here's a fun fact: if you're in the military, specifically if you're in the Marines, the food you get is one grade above inedible. That is that's what they call a checkable fact because they want you to be able to.
It's the prison staples as well too. It's like I believe the grade of tuna that is used in pet food is actually one or two grades above what is is sold to facilities that do prison.
F them. Because in prison all they have to do is just like in the Marines. I was going to say all they have to do is keep you alive, but if you're a Marine, that's sort of optional. All they really have to do is just provide the basic shelter for you. For some reason, though, if you're on welfare or food stamps or whatever it was we got when I was a kid, man, they just give you it was basic, but it was really good. This is Rick Emerson saying, have no shame about that. Doesn't matter. If somebody offers you something for free, it is yours. You take it and run home with it.
And I agree with that, sitting here drinking the Vizo that you had left in the fridge that I asked.
At least you asked, though.
I did ask.
Although I think you told me you did ponder just stealing it from me.
I did.
All right. Here's Dawn Taylor.
One man died and three others were injured in an explosion on the central Oregon coast. The deadly blast occurred at 8 p.m. Saturday night in the community of Seal Rock between Newport and Waldport. Lincoln County deputies say it appears that 38-year-old Eric Jason Rose of Kaiser was one of several people who were trying to load a black powder cannon device.
It sounds like the loading was successful.
The cannon exploded, sending shredded metal fragments flying in all directions. One of the fragments hit Rose, killing him. Three other men were injured, but only one of them seriously enough to be taken by ambulance to a hospital. Deputies contacted the Lincoln County District Attorney's Office for possible action. They also contacted the Lincoln County Medical Examiner, and the case is under investigation.
Let's make a note to revisit this next hour, because I'm smelling a Darwin watch. So, and I have many questions about that. So let's revisit that in the Rick Emerson Show. Here is Don Taylor.
Employees at Southeast Portland's Frankie's Franks say their 6-foot hot dog costume disappeared from the restaurant on Southeast 82nd Avenue sometime Saturday. The hot dog costume was being painted so it could appear at Park Rose High School's Funorama Festival. But employees said someone nabbed...
That's the saddest festival on earth, I can guarantee you. I know, like, I know my own name. That festival sucks. There's nothing good about it. Nothing called Funorama. Jesus. It's like they picked a name. It was like they had some sort of irony contest. I've never even been there, and I know that sucks. The Funorama Festival. Kill me. All right. Sorry. Go ahead.
The hot dog costume was being painted, but employees said someone nabbed it when the painter walked away for a 5-minute break. For him to come up missing, it hurts everyone, including
him?
Every kid that sees him, said Crystal Manley, a Frankie's Franks employee. I don't know how many smiles. I know we've all been in the costume in 100-degree weather, so I just can't believe it. The costume was created by a friend of the business, and the owners consider it irreplaceable. We just want him back, Manley said. No questions asked. The hot dog is about 6 feet tall, 40 pounds, and brown. Manley said, just like a hot dog, with big eyes.
I'm sorry. This is the best story we've ever had. Okay. Look, I don't even know where to start. Just because you consider
we'll
something...
We'll save that one for the next hour, too.
Just because you consider something irreplaceable, then make it so, friend. Go buy some more foam rubber. I mean, that's... I think the A to B there is pretty simple. I don't want to get ahead of myself. All right.
I actually saw that hot dog, somebody in that hot dog suit one day when I was driving to Fatboy Robert's house. And I got to his house. I was like, so I'm driving down the street. And I was like, of course, I have this terror of clowns, but I'm also like freaked out by people in big anthropomorphic suits.
Right.
So I was like, okay, I was really sort of unnerved by the giant waving hot dog.
Is it really just a hot dog with eyes?
Yeah. Here's a picture.
All right. I'm sorry.
It's a giant hot dog suit.
Have you seen this man?
And if you're driving down the street and you see this giant hot dog like waving at you, it's really unnerving. And so I told Bobby, and he said he'd never seen it. And I was going, you live in this neighborhood. How could you never see a 6-foot hot dog waving at you?
Well, but now he doesn't live in this neighborhood, though. I don't believe.
Well,
I know where he lives, and he I know where
well,
he lives.
Well, it's not actually his neighborhood, but I did
I like how
drive
any,
past there.
Any place in Southeast, is it's all the same.
It's all the same to me.
We all look the same to you, Don. Yeah, this is I mean, this is on the way to his house, I suppose. Yeah. I think I've driven by this place. I think this is like, I think it's like right between a porn store and a check cashing joint, but I could be wrong about that. The thing about this hot dog, I like how they're describing this as though it's an actual dog. The hot dog is about 6 feet tall, 40 pounds, and brown, just like a hot dog. I don't know what you make your hot dogs out of, friend. The last hot dog I had was more of a, you know, hot dog colored, not so much a brown.
Well, it is a brown. I have hot dogs in the fridge. If you
that
want
are brown?
To... Yes. Would you like me to go get one now?
No, I would
talk
not.
About
please,
this later,
there's,
though, but...
to no extent at all, would I like you
hot
to go get
that. Hot dogs are indeed brown, though.
When is the last? What hot dog have you ever had that was brown?
Well,
hot dogs are a sort of reddish color.
They're a slightly pinkish reddish brown.
They're meat colored. Meat isn't brown unless it's like a steak that's been cooked or something.
But the thing is, like bologna and hot dog. Yes, in cartoons it's pink, but in real life it's a slightly pinkish brown. It's cooked meat. It's brown.
Hot dogs are not brown. You're just wrong. Sausage is brown.
Hot dogs are sausages for one thing, and yes, they're brown.
A hot dog is okay. Hot dog is not.
Here's Don't make me go get a hot dog to
Here's
show
how you.
You
know hot dogs aren't sausages. We have different names to tell them apart. All right.
Hot dogs are a subgenre of sausage.
I would admit that they are sausage-shaped, but that's not the same thing. How can... That's like saying that a hot... Therefore, a hot dog and like a sausage patty are the same thing.
Well,
there are no hot dog patties. A hot dog is not the same thing as sausage. Okay, we have to stop this now. We have to stop it now. I don't care what anybody says to you in the text box about this. We're not discussing it anymore. We're moving on.
All right.
flagging this and I'm putting it in the Rick Emerson Show pile. Don't forget the Rick Emerson Show does begin at 1 o'clock. Ladies, I can see you looking at the text box. You avert
no,
your
no,
eyes.
No, no, no. I was setting up sound, audio for the next story, actually.
I'll put this over here in the fabled Rick Emerson pile to my, well, it used to be on my right. I don't know, the table's on my left, so everybody's going to be okay with that.
Okay.
All right, there you go. Here's Don Taylor at the Legion of News news desk.
An 11-year-old Michigan boy was cutting the lawn for the very first time Sunday afternoon when he had a bit of an accident. Let's hear what happened from the boy's 13-year-old brother and some concerned newsman. Here we go. Any moment.
I just heard a scream and I just went like sprinting to him.
Joey's older brother, Tim, was in charge of showing his little brother the ropes, how to use the mower, and how to get the job done. But Joey was wearing flip-flops and pulled the mower right over his unprotected foot,
wow,
cutting his foot badly and cutting off two of his toes.
It was kind of nasty.
Wow.
Like, his left foot, like, his pinky, his little toe and his middle toe, they were both, like, up. Right off, and you could see the bones sticking out. It was really nasty.
You know that he means that as it was really cool. That's the euphemism right there. What is it with kids having every kid interviewed on news programs across the world? They all have a stuffed up nose adenoidal condition.
I think all children are just have snot.
They've got
in their face all the time.
Children are eternally congested. I don't know what that's all about. You know that he secretly thinks that that is the greatest thing that has ever happened to him. And that he wanted to go and, like, he probably did take photos of the bone sticking out. I would have.
Well, the boy was rushed to Children's Hospital in Detroit, where the mother was told the doctors were going to try and reattach his toes.
But I'm sorry, there's all of these kids who have gunshot wounds. He's just going to have to wait. All right, here's Don Taylor at the Legion of News news desk.
Let's do a little science news.
It's time for Science on the March right here on Legion of News on PDX.FM.
Researchers developing a new method of vaccine delivery say that people could even use them at home. A patch with microneedles. Tiny little needles so small you don't even feel them. They would be attached to a patch, and the little needles would barely penetrate the skin before dissolving and releasing the vaccine. Researchers, led by Mark Prausnitz of Georgia Institute of Technology, reported their research on microneedles in Sunday's edition of Nature Medicine. The business side of the patch feels like fine sandpaper, he said. In tests of microneedles without vaccine, people rated the discomfort as 1/10 to 1/20 that of getting a standard injection. Nearly everyone said it was painless. Some medications are already delivered by patches, such as nicotine patches, but that's absorbed through the skin. Attempts to develop patches with the flu vaccine absorbed through the skin have not been successful. In the Georgia Tech work, however, the vaccine is still injected, but the needles are so small they don't hurt, and it doesn't take any special training to use the patch. So two problems are solved right away: fear of needles and disposal of leftover hypodermic needles.
Wait, so the patch is just, so it's like Velcro almost, except it's not little hook things, it's needles.
Yeah.
That's pretty fantastic.
And you put it on your skin and the needles kind of stick
into
your skin.
Now, is that how the nicotine patch works? Or is it like a liquid? Or
no,
is it seeps into you?
Yeah, it's just a liquid that is absorbed into the skin.
All right.
But they haven't been able to make that work with flu vaccine. It has to actually be injected subcutaneously.
Okay, that's pretty fantastic. Well, that's like if you get acupuncture done. Where you don't even feel it because it's just like it goes, it's so small it goes into your, like between your pores or something.
Yeah.
The one time I had acupuncture done, like I kept waiting for the guy to, you know, and I looked down and there was like 100 needles in me. I didn't even realize.
Yeah,
I hadn't even felt it.
Needles are thin enough you won't actually feel them in your skin. So,
excellent.
And these are very, very tiny.
Fantastic.
The patch would be placed on the skin and left for 5 minutes to 15 minutes. It can remain longer without doing any damage. In tests they did on mice, the microneedles delivered a correct dose of the flu vaccine. So there you go. The needles are 650 microns in length, which would be 3/100 of an inch. And there are 100 on the patch used in the mouse study.
That's a legitimate advance. You know, that's not something where they just figured out how to grow an ear on the back of a mouse and then never do anything with it. I mean, that's a thing that actually makes our lives better. Fantastic. That is science being put to work for us.
Thanks. The drug MDMA, better known as ecstasy, might be illegal, but a new study suggests that it's also a promising treatment for post-traumatic stress disorder. The study, which appears in the Journal of Psychopharmacology, included 20 people with PTSD stemming from traumas such as sexual assault and combat stress. On two separate occasions, 12 of the people took a dose of MDMA and then spoke for several hours with a pair of trained therapists. The others took a placebo but received the same therapy. 2 months later, 10 of the 12 people who took ecstasy had improved to the point where they no longer met the diagnostic criteria for PTSD, and 3 participants whose condition had prevented them from holding down a job were able to return to work. In contrast, just 2 of the 8 people in the placebo group experienced a substantial improvement. MDMA is believed to raise levels of the feel-good brain chemical serotonin and the so-called bonding hormone oxytocin. The resulting sense of euphoria and emotional warmth seems to help patients connect with their therapists. A lot of the time, one of the researchers said, people have quite painful and challenging experiences revisiting the trauma, and ecstasy can help them do it without being overwhelmed or numbed out.
I think it's just part of being an American. If there's a drug called ecstasy, we ought to just be given it. I mean, what
have you ever taken ecstasy?
No. Like I've spent a lot of time sucking on a glow stick, you know, and clutching a pacifier? twirling around in a warehouse somewhere with hippies? No, I have not. But that doesn't mean I don't want to. Clearly, I am just, you know, sometimes people talk about...
I did, and it was delightful.
Well, of course, it's called ecstasy. I mean, yeah. How could it not be? Here's the whole dichotomy with me, is that, I'm just so unbelievably lame and straight-laced. Yet, clearly, I have this secret, or maybe not so secret, desire to just be like to be a hooligan. So, sometimes people talk about being like a dry alcoholic, and I really am just like a clean and sober junkie at heart. I mean, I know in my heart that I really am meant to be a fantastic abuser of drugs and alcohol, and I just
sheer control of will.
Well, it's not even really that. It's just my sure and certain knowledge that I would just end up covered in my own filth, like in a gutter, almost immediately. I mean, it would take like a month. And I would be like at stage 10 on the Faces of Meth chart. Like I wouldn't be like a gradual decline or a slippery slope. I would just fall right into just being covered in my own sputum somewhere. So, but what kind of cruel government withholds a drug called ecstasy? I mean, that's just mean.
What's really interesting is that when it first started hitting the streets and people started taking
it. The streets, by which you mean your house?
Like with everything, there were these cover stories on Time and Newsweek.
Is about, your child safe from ecstasy?
And these horrible things that happen, like people having brain hemorrhages and going into convulsions and dying. And the thing is, I knew people who took ecstasy on occasion. I had never heard even a third-hand story of someone dying or having convulsions or brain problems from doing ecstasy. And I lived in Los Angeles. And it was like...
the home of the brain hemorrhage.
I never even heard one of those. I had a friend whose friend had a friend. No, never. So it was like with D&D, pot or hula hoops or anything that is suddenly popular. All of a sudden there's this weird media blitz where you're told that it's like the most dangerous thing that has ever happened.
Will comic books kill your child?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, we should put that in the Rick Emerson pile as well. I have lots of questions about ecstasy.
Well, just wanted to also mention, the study was funded by the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies.
Wow. That's the best place to work ever. That's a fantastic... I wonder if they can get grants or something, or if that's just one of those things that, like, Timothy Leary's, estate funds.
Well, and you yourself may not do any illicit things, but one of the listeners in the text box says, I'm picking up your slack, good sir.
Excellent. Thank you. Rick Emerson appreciates it. You be my proxy out there.
And that is all of our science news.
There's science on the march. Or Monday right here on Legion of News. Don't forget, coming up at 1 o'clock today, the Rick Emerson Show will storm the airwaves at rickemerson.com. Today featuring a visit from Oregon music editor Ryan White. Ryan White will be here. We'll have today's Top 5 as well, which is sort of a follow-up to Friday. Friday, Don Taylor presented the Top 5 soundtracks that are far better than the film that created them. And I'll be doing my own version of that. Plus, the triumphant return of the week in Geek from Mr. Aaron Duran and our wrap-up of last night's episode of True Blood. That is all in the way via The Rick Emerson Show at rickemerson.com at 1 o'clock. Here is Dawn Taylor.
In an update on a story that we reported here last week, Cowlitz County Prosecutor Sue Bauer says she will not prosecute the Kelso man accused of shooting a burglary suspect in the buttocks with a hunting bow. The Daily News of Longview reports that Bauer said it appears Scott Allen Schwingdorf acted to stop a person he believed was fleeing after committing a residential burglary. As such, she says his act was legal. Police say that when Schwingdorf saw Galen Lewis Crane prowling around a neighbor's vacant property on December 13th of last year, he armed himself with a hunting bow and stalked Crane for 3 blocks. Schwingdorf shot Crane in the left buttock with a broadhead arrow. Crane was later charged with residential burglary.
I wonder how far he could have stalked the guy before she would have determined that he was just being creepy. You know what I mean?
Five blocks, well, then you're just way out of line.
Well, seriously, like, if you followed a guy for a mile and a half with a bow and arrow and then just shot him in the ass, it seems like the judge might say, now, it seems to me, sir, you just wanted to hunt somebody with a bow and arrow and shoot them in the ass. So I don't know where the line of demarcation falls there. That just seems a little odd, but, you know, what do I know? I'm not a master of jurisprudence, but it...
You wait like 3 days, go to his house, ring the doorbell.
Wham! Right in the ass with the bow. I don't understand exactly how that works, but, you know, whatever. I mean, good for you. Again, not unlike doing unemployment or ecstasy or something. If you can get away with it, have at it. I'm impressed that he was able to do that. I remember my dad tried to teach me to hunt something with a bow and arrow when I was a kid. That was just a road to nowhere. There was just one disaster after another. I mean, it really is. That's a difficult thing. I saw Ted Nugent in concert one time, and Ted Nugent didn't hit the thing the first time. He had a giant, Saddam Hussein doll. This is in 1991. Of course, and he was there touring with Damn Yankees, and I remember where the hell I was living then, somewhere in Washington. But he was with Damn Yankees, who nobody cared about, and it was like you really just went to see because Ted Nugent was part of the group. And but he had a massive Saddam Hussein doll that was like 30 feet high, and at the end, and then he shot it in the junk and set it on fire. It was fantastic, and it really was. But he had to try twice; he missed it the first time. All right, here's Dawn Taylor at the Legion of News news desk.
Hundreds of people lined up outside the Rose Garden Arena, hoping to become the next Biggest Loser. The popular NBC reality show held auditions for its 11th season in Portland on Saturday. The show gives people a chance to not only lose weight, but to change their lives dramatically. Another incentive, the show's winner gets $250,000 grand prize. I will have a good chance because I can compete, said Erica Akiyama, one of those who tried out in Portland. I think some people who are really overweight won't have the ability to compete. That's my biggest fear, said Angie Gibbons, another candidate. Putting on those spandex shorts and sports bra and getting weighed in front of everybody, and they always play that dum 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 music when you stand on the scale.
As opposed to putting your fat ass on television just for standing outside the Rose Garden, where you're getting nothing but sunstroke and shame. As the guy from like K2 walks by and goes, "Tell me why you're on the why you're on the line for the Biggest Loser, ma'am," and then you know you're just, I mean, yeah, look, you know
someone actually goes to this thing and stands in line all day to audition for it, and then she says her biggest fear is the beginning of the show where she has to stand up in a sports bra and spandex shorts in front of everyone and television. But you're there auditioning for it.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
And winning nothing, you know. And, I mean, really, how many people turned out for it, did you say?
No.
Because that's just here, right? They just do, because they canvass cities, like, across the country.
Yeah.
You know, so, well.
They need people that are at least 100 pounds overweight and want contestants who are competitive with an outstanding personality. There was a...
with an outstanding personality. Could it be more of a cliche of a show about fat people? No. She's got a great, great personality. And she's funny. Funny, too. I have never in my life seen a complete episode of that show.
No.
Because what's the other one? There's Fitter Fat or... No.
That's
a Bette Midler album. Sorry. I'm not gay. There's a, what is it, Celebrity Fat Club?
Do It to Lose.
Fat
oh,
Farm?
I've seen that one, Celebrity Fat Club. That was kind of
That's the one with Janie Lane from Warrant.
Yeah.
That's what it takes to get me to watch a fitness show, because that's just like, I recognize that I am lucky. And it's that I've never really, you know, it's not like I've ever really struggled with my weight or whatever. So maybe that's why those shows have no appeal to me, because it's like, it's not anything with which I can identify.
But
even
they had one that had the crazy Baldwin on it. They had one that had Screech on it. They had one with Mia Tyler, who was just like, I want to lose a little bit of weight, but I'm a plus-size model. I'm not going to get thin, so screw you.
Seriously.
It was kind of awesome.
You lose too much weight, you lose that Torrid contract,
yes.
Sister. So, Dustin Diamond?
Yeah.
Isn't a fat guy.
Well, he was kind of pudgy.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that kind of pudgy?
Yeah, Bible Man was on one, too. Willie Ames.
Willie Ames.
He did one. He'd gotten kind
of none of those
rotund.
People are fat, though, except from maybe Mia Tyler. Maybe. Yeah. Maybe. And Stephen Baldwin, I suppose.
Yeah.
No, it's Daniel Baldwin.
I don't remember which one. I can't keep my crazy
Baldwin. Well, you said
Baldwin's
the crazy right. Baldwin.
Was it Daniel Baldwin, the one who still can act? Who's the one? Who's the one that was on
Homicide? Yeah. Daniel Baldwin. Okay. Yeah.
So I think
Daniel.
This was. I think Stephen was the one, and he ended up having to leave because he was like not Jeff Conaway, but one. Every once in a while, they'll get somebody on there.
Jeff Conaway was Celebrity Rehab.
Who like pulls a Busey and is just too obnoxious and just ends up walking off the show.
No, Jeff Conaway was on. Was it Celebrity Rehab or was that like?
No, it was Celebrity Rehab.
Okay.
Yeah.
God, we're losers. All right.
But there's an interesting piece you can find online where a woman who was a contestant on The Biggest Loser actually wrote about their experiences and how just kind of really insanely horrible and unrealistic it was. Like, they have them come back and they weigh them ostensibly every week, and they lose this ridiculous amount of weight in a week, like 15 pounds. But a week on the show can be as much as 3 weeks in real life. And also, they were just kept locked up and forced to exercise. Forced to exercise to the point where they were like throwing up, not given enough water.
Oh man! See, why don't they put that on television?
They're just brutalized on that show.
It's like Hanoi Hilton, the reality show.
Yeah.
I would completely watch that. Hey, has somebody thought about doing a show called Hanoi Hilton, where they send Paris Hilton to Vietnam and she has to like live in the woods?
So I'm right. Jeff Conaway and Daniel Baldwin were both contestants on Celebrity Fit Clip. So,
all right, so that's
Conaway did that one too.
Yeah, and he was nuts.
He walked off the show fairly early on. He was just completely insane.
Full on screaming crazy.
Yeah.
But you missed my fantastic idea for a reality show.
I'm sorry. Which?
Hanoi Hilton, where you send Paris to Vietnam. You send Paris Hilton to Vietnam. And then she's got to live like in the bush.
I like that.
You know, she's got
to. So to speak.
No, she's got to, you know, you just send her into the jungle. It'd be like, oh, we're going to come back for you in like a month. All right, have fun. Bye. And then you just leave her there. I would totally watch that. Maybe not.
There was a BBC show that they only did, I think, 5 or 6 episodes of it. And each episode, they would take a celebrity and put them in this kind of man in the wild. You got to survive out there. You have to make your own shelter and hunt your own food and do all this stuff for like a week kind of a thing. And they did one with Lenny Henry. And they did one, I think it was Ewan McGregor. They dumped him in the middle of the rainforest somewhere, and he had like a guy who was with him for like a day or so who showed him how to like scrape the bark off trees and how to build
that.
Something.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
You know, here's the other thing they should do. I don't know why nobody asks me for ideas. You know what they ought to do is just some television network ought to just they ought to just take something like some inanimate object like a trash can or a bicycle or a fake fire hydrant or something. And just put it in the middle of some horrible crime-ridden neighborhood in America with a camera inside and just let it go. You know what I mean? You know, just pick like the worst corner in Baltimore. Stick it there. You know, what's that fake mailbox with a camera inside? It's our new 8 o'clock show. You know, you just tune on to who knows what you're going to get. I mean, could be nothing. Could be a gang raping. You know, you never quite know. But that's part of the show's magic.
Yeah.
It's hard to believe that they don't have me on the board at some respectable television network helping to put these things together. Here's Dawn Taylor at the Legion of News news desk.
With midterm elections less than 4 months away, the top Republican in the Senate said Sunday that the GOP is proud to oppose many aspects of the Democrats' agenda. Senator Mitch McConnell, the minority leader, tells CNN's State of the Union that he feels confident Republicans will do well in the fall.
What cut is
this?
What?
Seats.
The environment is very good for a good year. You still have to actually win the races.
You do. How many do you think you might pick up?
You know I'm not going to answer that question. I think if the election were today, we'd
Stupid
have
cow.
A good day.
What? Who goes? Who is talking to somebody who willingly goes on a news program and then actually just says, you know, I'm not going to answer that question. And also, you're an elected representative. Well, the answer is that guy. All right. I mean, that takes a special kind. It takes a special kind of chutzpah to really be, you know, to actually just say it. You know, like, I understand that he's not going to answer the question. We all understand that. But to be an elected official and actually just go on television willingly, not like he's even being ambushed, and talk to a reporter and then just say, by the way, I'm not going to answer anything you really want to know. Go ahead. Fire away.
And speaking of chutzpah, McConnell says he feels confident Republicans have a good understanding of the issues and that will resonate with Americans.
I think if the election were today, we'd have a good day. We'd be in a better position. I'd like to be in better shape than the 41 that we have now. And I think the chances of that are pretty good.
God, it's like somebody gave Foghorn Leghorn a Senate seat somewhere.
I think if the election were today, we'd have a good day. We'd be in a better position.
Good.
I'm
white.
Someone in the text box says, the fellow sounds like he should be giving directions to the pet cemetery.
I represent the Mi'kmaq constituency, and we're going to have a fantastic 10.
Pointing to victories in recent special elections, the number two Democrat in the House sought Sunday to buck the conventional wisdom about his party's prospects in this fall's midterms. House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer said Americans understand they are better off economically now than they were in the previous administration.
Is this progress?
Assess.
What? Oh, I'm sorry.
We think that when Americans assess, do we want to go back? Do we want to, in fact, repeal the successes we've had and repeat the mistakes that we've made that got us to this point? I think they're going to say, no, they don't want to go back to the Bush policy.
What is his name? Steny?
That's what it says here. Steny. S-T-N-E.
That's not a real name.
S-T-N-Y.
I think that's got to be somebody at the AP sneezed and hit the wrong keys on his keyboard.
Or it's short for, you know, Stenworthy or some
Stentorious.
Hoyer explained that Democrats will talk about what? Oh, Hoyer explained what Democrats will talk about as they head into the midterm elections.
What we're going to focus on is not returning to the failed Bush policies that brought us to this point, but focus on the efforts that we have made, which are making progress. We haven't succeeded yet, but we are making substantial progress. The economy is growing.
I'm sorry. I slipped into a somnambulistic coma there for a second. You're listening to Legion of News right here on PDX.FM. Don't forget, this program goes up on iTunes later today. It'll also be archived here at PDX.FM and at LegionofNews.com. It is also accessible via your mobile device. If you want to tune it on your handheld, it is mobile.pdx.fm. Mobile.pdx.fm. Don't forget, the Rick Emerson Show comes up at 1 o'clock today. At 1 o'clock, the Rick Emerson Show broadcasts at rickemerson.com, featuring a visit from Ryan White, music editor for The Oregonian. We also got today's top five, the top five soundtracks that are better than the film that created them. So Dawn did her version of that list on Friday. I'll be doing mine today, which is not just a way to tell you that you got yours wrong somehow. I mean, you did, but that's not why. I hadn't really thought of it in those terms until you put it that way. Penis Watch coming up today. Taser Watch coming up today. Aaron Duran's Week in Geek. Our True Blood recap. Oh, and then I'll talk about my Leverage audition on Friday, which was both it was the best of times, it was the worst of times. I mean, it really is. Kill me. All right, here's, I'm sorry, was that out loud? Here's Dawn Taylor.
Oh, let's segue into entertainment news.
Here's your entertainment news for Monday, right here on Legion of News.
The publicist says Zsa Zsa Gabor is having surgery Monday morning to replace the hip she broke over the weekend.
She's dead.
When she fell out of bed in her Bel Air home.
Dead.
She's dead?
She's complete. Well, I'm guessing. That's what that means.
Oh.
No, she's having surgery. That means she's dead. And when they say that she's close to death, she's being embalmed.
Why wouldn't they just say she's dead?
Because they gotta get their ducks in a row. Publicists have to get their ducks in a row, and they have to start making phone calls and aligning everything so they can do a marketing push for some sort of commemorative plate. But they gotta give themselves breathing room. So you are always two steps behind when publicists tell you things like that. She's already dead, I'll guarantee.
Publicist John Blanchett said the 93-year-old actress will undergo the procedure at Ronald Reagan UCLA Medical Center.
Is dead.
Blanchett said Gabor was watching television in her Bel Air home Saturday night.
When she died.
When she reached to answer the phone and fell to the floor.
Dead.
She was taken by ambulance to the hospital, where she spent Sunday with husband Prince Frederick von Anhalt and other family members.
Who was clutching her lifeless body and wailing.
The actress is partially paralyzed from a 2002 car accident.
Also from being dead.
Which required her to use a wheelchair. She also reportedly had a stroke in 2005.
Okay. When is the last time anybody saw her in public doing anything that required her to be mobile on her own?
Well, she's paralyzed.
And dead, Dawn. This just in, Zsa Zsa Gabor is dead. She's dead as she can possibly be. Just mark my words.
America's Got Talent judge Piers Morgan appears to be the front runner to claim the CNN talk show long hosted by Larry King. The British TV personality has won permission from NBC, which airs the hit talent contest, to pursue the CNN job, according to an industry official who requested anonymity because that person wasn't authorized to speak publicly about the changeover.
I don't even know who we're talking about.
He's like this British asshat who's on America's Got Talent. He's the one who isn't isn't Sharon Osbourne and isn't David Hasselhoff.
Oh, okay. I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah.
How sad that that's how we have to do it. All right. Yeah.
Morgan has been considered a favorite to replace King, who on June 29th announced his departure from the primetime perch he has occupied for a quarter century. Morgan is a 45-year-old former tabloid editor who turned to television several years ago. He's been a judge on Britain's Got Talent and its spinoff America's Got Talent. In 2008, he was champion of NBC's Celebrity Apprentice.
All right. Yeah. Well, this is clearly what I get for not watching enough of the Celebrity Apprentice show, because the only Celebrity Apprentice... Wait, was that 2008?
I don't know. Oh, yeah.
So I did watch it. So I do know that guy, because I think that was the same season that had the... I think that was the same season that Gene Simmons was on that show. I may be wrong
about that.
I
have never seen even a moment of that show. I have no idea.
The Celebrity Apprentice is way better than The Regular Apprentice, because I did watch the first couple seasons of The Regular Apprentice before it just became... The contestants, like in a post-Omarosa era, that show became just too shrill and unwatchable. Celebrity Apprentice became kind of great. The thing about those celebrity reality shows that are where they take and they make a celebrity version of some extant reality show is that you just, like, I think mentally you expect that celebrities are just going to be weird, nattering drama queens. And so it doesn't strike you as so contrived. Like, when you're watching a regular reality show, all you're thinking is... when you just watch some dick from Cleveland that they've got and they put him on the reality show, it's irritating because you can tell now at this point that they are all angling to now have a career as reality show stars or to get some non-reality show gig where they're hosting something on, like, the E! Channel.
So they're trying to play a role. Like, I'm the sexy one. I'm the villain. I'm the...
Right, yeah, they all think that it's going to land them a gig as, like, you know, a VJ somewhere or whatever. But, you know, when you're watching a celebrity version of that, they've already presumably created some career for themselves, even if they just do a lot of reality shows. So, you get the sense that if they are just some unbelievably attention-whoring, asshat, as you said, that probably is just how they are. That they are not living into some sort of a role. They just have been put in yet another position where they're allowed to behave as children on television. So Celebrity Apprentice, not bad at all, actually. The Gene Simmons season was the one that got me watching. But I think the following season, was the following season when I had Joan Rivers? Where she just, she was terrifying, by the way.
See, that's the thing is, if you want to keep me away from something... Then you put Joan Rivers in it. It's like, that is not a draw for me.
It's like, seriously, she looked like a ring wraith. I mean, it was bad. It was, so Joan Rivers, what do you think of this? All right. Okay. Well, I guess we'll go with the green then. You know, it was all very weird. All right. Here's Don Taylor.
James Gammon, the gravel-voiced actor who played the manager of the Cleveland Indians in the 1980s comedy Major League and had a host of other TV and movie roles, has died. He was 70.
Fortunately, I don't remember who he is.
His agent, Merritt Blake, said Monday that Gammon had cancer and died Friday at his daughter's home in Costa Mesa. The craggy-faced actor also played the father on Don Johnson's TV show Nash Bridges. In addition to dozens of TV and movie appearances, Gammon was a noted stage actor who co-founded the Met Theater in Los Angeles. Gammon starred in several Sam Shepard plays, received a Tony nomination for his work on a 1996 Broadway production of Buried Child.
By the way, you are listening to Legion of News right here on PDX.FM, and it's also available at mobile.pdx.fm. And on iTunes, the Rick Emerson Show comes up today at 1 o'clock. We do want to take a moment right here during Legion of News, and we want to make an announcement. As you know, we are here because of many, many, many fine folks. Everybody at PDX.FM, of course, the assembled audience and listeners, and now our very first sponsor, who we want to welcome today to today's installment of Legion of News. Today, on Monday, July 19th, 2010, it is a Portland company called The Cleaning Solution. The Cleaning Solution. I'm going to give you the phone number here right up top as well. It's 971-533-3211. I'll repeat that again at the end, but it's 971-533-3211. And if you are anything like me, and I pray for your sake and for all of humanity that you are not, you have dogs that theoretically understand that they are not supposed to perhaps drag an entire pizza off the counter and then take that pizza down the hallway and take that pizza into the office and then down another hallway and into your bedroom, all the while tracking a thick sort of a thick sort of perma-staining tomato sauce with them. If you are, in fact, like me in that regard, if you do have dogs that do these things, and if you are yourself just a horrific slob, and if you need things cleaned around your house, carpet-wise, upholstery-wise, marble, tile, anything you walk on, the Cleaning Solution, which is a company based right here in Portland, Oregon, can take care of that. Pet damage, odor repair, whether it's residential, whether it's commercial, if it's your house, if it's your business, they can do this, and they can not only get it clean the first time, they can actually make sure that it stays clean all throughout the year, no matter where you track it, in snow or mud from the outside or whatever it is. They can actually do maintenance programs as well. And, the thing is, once you get it clean the first time, from then on, you're looking at like 40% of that cost to do, the maintenance. I mean, you can save yourself a ton just by having it done properly right out of the gate. So do yourself a favor and do a favor for your floor, your carpet, your rug, your linoleum, whatever it is that you walk on at your house or your business. Call the Cleaning Solution and ask for Michael, proud sponsor of Legion of News. And his number is 971-533-3211. 971-533-3211. The Cleaning Solution. This is Dawn Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
Well, new on television tonight, the Do Something Awards on VH1 will be hosted by Jane.
Have we officially run out of names?
I believe so, yes. They could have the Funorama Festival
the Do Something
and the Do
Awards.
Something Awards, okay. We had today. Jane Lynch is the host, and it's held at the Hollywood Palladium. It's a gala honoring social activism in which us celebrities and ordinary people are singled out for their charitable contributions. Among the nominees are Leonardo DiCaprio, who donated to the Haiti Relief Fund, Lady Gaga, who raised money for AIDS awareness, and Salma Hayek, who visited Sierra Leone and nursed other people's children. On BBC America, James May's Toy Stories, you can see a life-size bridge built entirely out of model construction sets. And there,
that seems dangerous. I mean, where would you build? It's not over the water, is it?
Well, I don't know.
I guess
I haven't
the show
seen
hasn't
the show
aired
yet.
Okay, fair enough. No, that's a fair point.
You'll have to tune into BBC America and watch James May's Toy Stories and find out.
Stories about the shows about bridges freak me out. I was watching this thing on the Discovery Channel, and they were talking about some bridge that's near Iceland that goes for like 17 miles across some barren Arctic wasteland part of the globe. And I had to turn the thing off. It was just weirding me out. I don't want to think about a bridge is just made out of Legos or some crap. All right. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
There is a series debut this evening, RuPaul's Drag U, which is a spinoff of RuPaul's Drag Race, which pairs frumpy ladies with drag stars to unlock their inner fabulosity. And
does it say fabulosity?
It does indeed.
Is that does it have a little T and a little M next to it?
And when they're done, they draguate.
Okay, that's pretty great, actually. All right, fair enough. See, that's like, I can get with that show because it's RuPaul,
yeah.
An exaggerated personality to begin with.
Yes.
It was very flamboyant. That was the word I couldn't find for some reason. Probably Alzheimer's. Very flamboyant personality from the get-go. And not just because he's a drag queen, but just because he's got an outsized personality in every conceivable way and always has. So that's a thing that doesn't rub me the wrong way. Whereas, you just get some schmo who works, at a yogurt shop at a strip mall somewhere, and you stick him on television, and then, suddenly he tries to manifest a colorful personality which does not in reality exist. That's the sort of thing that grates on me. Also, I admire this because you got to imagine, as a 7-foot-tall black man who likes to dress as a woman, there are limited opportunities for you in this country. I mean, as I think somebody once said, that's the minority inside a minority inside a minority. So really, one has to make their own way if that is the nature of your existence. And RuPaul has done a good job. Have you ever seen RuPaul when he's just dressed, in a masculine fashion?
Oh, yeah.
He's like the best looking guy who's ever existed. I saw this picture of it because you have the cane going on, which looks, you handle that the right way. It looks fantastic. This picture I saw of RuPaul, and I forget his real name. But I saw a picture of RuPaul. It was in like some magazine was reading on an airplane, like some Sky Mall type catalog. But it was like he was selling. He might have actually been selling a silver topped cane, now that I think about it. But it was him, and he had he was clean shaven on top, but then he had the Cisco on Deep Space Nine.
Oh yeah.
He had the Avery Brooks thing going on. The what is that called? The Van Dyke.
Yes.
The real neatly trimmed Van Dyke, and then he had it was like the full-on ascot, vest, jacket, spats, and then the silver top cape. It was the best-looking guy I'd ever seen in my entire life, and that's when I realized that I was hopelessly lame. It would never possibly be that cool. All right, here's Dawn Taylor.
Also, new tonight, there's a new episode of the TV show Huge on ABC Family.
Huge.
Which I have to admit, I watched this out of some kind of cringing sort of curiosity, and it turns out it's really good.
What is Huge?
It is a show starring Nikki Blonsky, who was in Hairspray,
right.
And it's about a bunch of kids at a summer fat camp. And it seems like it could be really just cringe-inducing and exploitive and terrible. And it's awesome. The show is really good. And it really does address, very realistically, a lot of sort of the fears and awkwardness that heavier kids have
so
to deal with.
It's a scripted show. It's not a reality show.
No,
okay.
It's a scripted show on ABC Family.
Almost like a little Freaks and Geeks kind of a thing going
kind
on.
Kind of, yeah. And it's Nikki Blonsky is this girl who is sort of sent there against her will and is kind of trying to fight the power and doesn't really want to buy into a lot of this stuff. Gina Torres is the head of the camp.
Excellent.
Haley Hasselhoff, David Hasselhoff's daughter, is the prettiest, least fat girl at the camp, but she's still at fat camp. There's always somebody like that. It's like, you know, it's kind of like...
Doesn't really belong.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, what the hell is she doing there? It's like, I'm so fat. And everyone else is going, no, you're really not.
I was just thinking it sounds like the name of some horrible 1970s, film, The Prettiest Girl at Fat Camp, starring Sandy Duncan.
But it's really very funny and touching and cool, and it's really very enjoyable.
Haley Hasselhoff, is she the 911 daughter?
Probably.
She's
I
the
don't
one that
know.
Called that was like filming
about the
him,
hamburger.
Filming him trying to eat a sandwich or whatever. David hungry.
So anyway, so there is your TV and entertainment for today.
Here's Dawn Taylor at the Legion of News news desk right here at PDX.fm.
Authorities in Pennsylvania say a 70-year-old skydiver from New York was killed when his parachute got tangled with another man's and he fell to the ground. Police say that Theodore Wilson of New Rochelle, New York, and 75-year-old George Flynn of Colonial, New Jersey, tumbled about 75 feet to the ground after their open parachutes became entangled Saturday in the Pocono Mountains. Wilson was killed. Flynn is in critical condition. The man had jumped at Sky's The Limit skydiving at the Stroudsburg Pocono Airport, about 70 miles north of Philadelphia.
There's some sort of get-off-my-line joke here, but I'm not going to do that. Be insensitive. All right, here's Dawn Taylor.
Yeah. Got time for one or two more here. A Seattle woman was arrested Friday after police said she was driving drunk with her young children in the car, and her blood alcohol content was measured at nearly four times the legal limit.
Well done.
West Lynn police said Sarah Rattray, 43, crashed off of I-205 South's off-ramp at Willamette Drive around 8:45 p.m., causing her tire to blow out. Rattray was getting help changing her tire from a passerby at a gas station when police approached her. Officers said Rattray's BAC level was 0.29%,
Jesus.
Nearly four times the legal limit.
Wow.
Police said she had her two young daughters in the car with her on her drive from Seattle to West Lynn. No one was injured in the crash.
God
Rattray damn.
Rattray
was arrested and taken to Clackamas County Jail, where she was booked on suspicion of DUII. And two counts of recklessly endangering another person.
And where she fit right in, I would imagine, 0.29 is that's a lot. I mean, that is actually 4.5 times the legal limit.
And apparently if she drove from Seattle to West Lynn, as it says they did, she must have been drinking on the way.
Oh, yeah. Well, of course.
Because otherwise you should have sobered up by then.
No, you got to have some maintenance boozing. You kind of have like a little, just, you know, for that. I mean, it's, come on now. Jesus. All right. And let's do one more here, and then we'll wrap it up for this Monday.
A Queens, New York man being treated for depression at a group residence was blinded by a racist behemoth who gouged out his eyes, a lawsuit alleges.
That's not really going to do much for your depression, by the way.
Jason Wallace used his bare hands to rip out Lachman Ramnarine's eyes, the suit says. Wallace pleaded not guilty to assault with intent to disfigure. The hulking 280-pound attacker repeatedly threatened to kill Ramnarine in the Queens Village apartment they shared under the supervision of the agency PSCH.
By the way, I don't think that's actually the intent to disfigure. I think that's actual disfigurement that he did there. Yeah.
Wallace became unstable and aggressive, said Ramnarine's lawyer, Michael Grossman. He repeatedly threatened my client with words like, "I am going to kill you," and "I'll break your bones because I hate Indian people."
Well, there's a certain clarity of vision there, so to speak. Sorry. Let's just end this now, shall we? Okay. Anyway, Legion of News is brought to you each and every weekday by PDX.FM and originates from the studios of the Emerson News Network. At the news desk is Don Taylor. Advanced technology and magic provided by Thomas Gill. Our executive producer is Bruce Agler. Our chief of staff is Cheryl Genicoa. Don't forget, this program is available on iTunes as well as archived here at PDX.FM and LegionofNews.com. The Rick Emerson Show begins next at RickEmerson.com. This has been another exciting episode of
Legion of News on PDX.FM.